Welcome to another edition of the Sal and Bob Steakhouse Podcast. I'm comedian Sal D'Amelio. Alongside of me here is comedian Bob Phillips. How you doing today, Bob?
I'm doing great, man. This is big time for me, man. We're going to be talking boxing this episode.
This is a great episode. We got a great interview coming up with boxing columnist William Detloff that you're going to hear in a little bit. We just did it. I think this is the first time we've ever recorded this late at night after a show. We found this place in downtown New Baltimore called Finn's, and we're having some...
What a great place.
We're just having some steak bits and some wings. We're having a couple glasses of wine. We just knocked it out of the park, a show fundraiser for veterans.
Michigan AmVets, right?
Michigan AmVets. Ladies Auxiliary put this on over at
the New Baltimore Civic Center.
And it's like 11 o'clock at night here on a Friday, and we're just chilling out. The bar's kind of emptying out a little bit. It was really busy earlier, but they've let us just kind of just hang out in the corner here, and we're gonna eat some great food here and just talk about boxing.
Great place to unwind.
It's our sweetest day episode. Although we're the two most singlest guys you ever met.
The most eligible bachelors in the podcast world.
Yes, and you were comedian number two tonight, so that kind of goes
along
with
the
dating.
That's what they call me, comedian number two.
Yeah, you were comedian and bachelor number two on stage. No, but we had a great time. We got to thank Danielle and my friend Sandy that actually hooked me up with this gig, or us.
That was a great show, man. It was sold out.
We had great sets. Alan Black emceed and did just a great job.
He did a great job.
And they did something that we don't really normally like in the comedy world. They did an intermission to kind of sell more alcohol.
Could have done without that, but
If it's for the veterans,
you knocked it out of the park.
I'm going to do it. And I was a little worried about if the crowd would be back into it, and they were. They got right back into the comedy mode.
They did.
And it was just a great, great night. They had pizza over there for us. They had White Claws. You had a lot of your White Claw joke.
My first White Claw.
To say your White Claw joke.
Well, it's just a silly little thing.
I know, but it was
funny.
I don't
mean to brag, but White Claw was my nickname in college.
That, and there was another joke you said.
About White Claw? The joke? Yeah, this is White Claw is 2019 Zima.
There you go. But it killed last night too. That joke killed. I think it was funny. But so we're having a great time. We got a great interview coming up with William Detloff. This guy's written about all kinds of fights. He has a biography on Ezra Charles. He did an instructional book with Smoke and Joe Frazier called Box Like the Pros. Great interview with him. You guys are going to enjoy that.
Yeah,
so
we did that
for joining
before
us.
We came up here.
Yeah.
And that was a lot of fun.
You've done a lot of boxing. What is your official record of your
My
boxing
official
career?
Record was 8-2 as an amateur boxer.
Okay. Yours was 8-2?
8-2.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
So I don't even know what my record would be because I told you a little bit of the story off air. I won't delve into it, but there was a trainer in Livonia, Michigan named Paul Soucy. We both know Paul Soucy. He trained
Craig Payne's fighters. Yep.
Yeah, you fought his fighters. He trained Sanjay Batra, who you fought.
Yep. And lost to.
Yeah, we got to get him on the show so that you guys can talk
about
that.
We do. I've been reaching out to him to get film of that fight.
I'll get a hold of those guys. But you fought him. Anyway, Paul Soucy was a trainer in Livonia, and I used to know him from the neighborhood.
Yeah.
And he would back in the day, I was 6'3", 175, perfect fighter's weight.
Perfect light heavyweight.
And he would be like, I want you to fight. I want to train you. And
I know what he was seeing in you.
I don't know. I played baseball. I played basketball. I played football. I played all those other sports. Somehow, some way, I got my ass to go into his training facility. And he got me in a ring. I lasted 45 seconds in a sparring match with somebody. I don't know why I ended so quickly. I just said, I'm done.
Done.
I got hit in the head or something.
I don't want to get
hit.
I'm
like, I'm done. So I don't know what my record is. Would that be 0-0-0 in 45 seconds?
It wasn't a complete round. So you would be, you'd be
0-1-0.
Yeah, it would be a draw.
Okay, it would be a draw?
Yeah, right. I think so. It was kind of like a Roberto Duran, a no mas situation there.
All right. Well, at least I can
But you got in there, man.
I got in the ring. Yeah.
You got in there. You laced him up and you took your shot at it. So,
yeah.
All good for you, buddy.
That's all I did. That's my boxing career.
Well, speaking of boxing, we got Bill Detloff coming on soon, and I can't wait for that. You just heard one of my favorite singers.
Yeah.
Boom Boom Mancini by Warren Zevon. You know, I mean, and Ray Mancini, Boom Boom, was
a great song.
Yeah, it's a great song, and he was a great fighter in the 80s. He wasn't an elite fighter, but he was. He captured the imagination of people in the 80s. He was a good guy, and he's still a good guy. Really colorful, lightweight, out of Youngstown, Ohio. But the reason we're playing that, because we're talking about boxing, but the tie-in to the one-hit wonder is that, unbelievably, one of my musical heroes, Warren Zevon, was a one-hit wonder.
Yeah.
You know, Werewolves of London, that was his thing.
Yep.
He had such a huge back catalog that, you know, a lot of people aren't aware of. But anyway, that's what we're talking about.
Great tune for today.
Yeah.
That was recorded in August of 1987. It was that particular song that you just heard in our intro was on his album.
Sentimental Hygiene.
Sentimental Hygiene, correct.
32 years ago.
Yeah.
That can't be possible. Warren sadly died in 2002, was a favorite of David Letterman, as I frequently bring up on this show.
Yeah, no.
Two of my favorite entertainers, Letterman and Zevon. But so yeah, there's
the song is about the fight with
Bobby Chacon.
You told me a little bit about it off air. That's really interesting how he basically got his ass kicked.
Yeah.
And you told
by Alexis Arguello.
Yeah, and you told me how Alexis was literally punching him, going to asking the ref to stop the fight.
Yeah.
Because he was just pummeling this guy, and then 7 months later,
7 weeks,
7 weeks,
7 weeks.
It's 7 months.
Yeah,
7 weeks later. How'd that fight happen 7 weeks later?
Well, okay, this was the mid '80s, and so you had and they still have it going on today. You have the WBC and the WBA, the World Boxing Council, the World Boxing Association. You got these two competing governing bodies. Well, back then was, you know, back in the 50s, 60s, 70s, you only had one champion per weight class. But in the 80s, they got this these competing governing bodies. And so you had a WBA champion and a WBC champion, which didn't make any sense at all. But you had two champions atop every division. So Boom Boom fought. I think Alexis was the WBC champion.
Yeah.
And Alexis Arguello was just a class above everybody. He was just such an unbelievable fighter. And he was just taking it to Boom Boom the whole fight. And he literally would turn to the ref and say, "You need to stop this. I'm killing this kid." And then they finally stopped it. And then 7 weeks later, after getting stitched up, after having his head handed to him
amazing.
By the best boxer in the world, fights Arturo Frias in Vegas and wins the title. So, you know, Boom Boom really had a lot of heart.
Wow.
Coming back from that.
That's great.
I mean, the wounds hadn't even healed yet.
Jeez.
And he's back in the ring.
That's
so
insane.
Great story, huh?
Yeah, it's a great story. So that's the song you heard. We are at Finn's. If you're ever in the New Baltimore area, we're right by the water here, right along the coast.
Great little place.
Near Port Huron. And you can come here for breakfast. You can get a New Baltimore omelet here, Eggs Benedict, for breakfast. You come in here for lunch. We had we're having some buffalo wings and some steak bits.
Yeah, good stuff.
Good wine good wine. They got beer taps. It's not a very big place. They have a upstairs. And so if you're ever in New Baltimore, stop by Finn's. Good little place. It's kind of like like a Cheers type place. You can tell there's probably a guy at the bar here that comes here every night.
And people are celebrating Sweetest Day here. We're not, but
yeah, that's true. I guess that's true. There's still some late night dates going on.
Can I just say something? That is the bullshit holiday of all time.
I don't understand.
People talk about
Hallmark
holidays.
Sweetest Day till this morning. So
yeah, I mean, people talk about Hallmark. You know, it's a post Sweetest Day morning.
Or wife, what do you need to? What do I got to look on the calendar this morning? And go, oh, it's Sweetest Day. I got to go on Tinder and send a flower on a profile or something?
As a single guy? What do we do?
Nothing.
What
do?
We always do. We just sit around and complain that it's another holiday we got to get through. So, but this is the thing. Now, this is a Midwest observation, okay? East Coast, West Coast, they don't even know about this. This is a Michigan, Ohio, Illinois, Indiana type thing. It's spreading out a little bit because Hallmark has Sweetest Day cards now, right?
Yeah.
But most people listening to this podcast, this is going to be the first they've ever heard of Sweetest Day, all right?
Yeah.
So now it's another candy and perfume and jewelry holiday. I'm going to give you the lowdown, though, on how it originally started.
Okay.
Created in 1921 in Cleveland, its original purpose was to bring attention to the underappreciated, like nurses, senior citizens, the poor, and specifically orphans, Sal.
Yeah.
Orphans.
Like an orphan holiday.
Right. But now, because the ladies decided they needed another holiday and couldn't wait till Halloween, all the candy goes to them.
And then you got Valentine's Day in about 5 months.
You're already looking forward to hating that holiday, I could see.
Where's the single guy holiday? Where's the holiday?
Somebody was telling me on Facebook, though. I'm going to say this. I have a friend, Sue Cabler is her name. And she was saying that, you know, she's Sweetest Day doesn't exist in Massachusetts, which I'm not surprised by. But she also said something about March 14th. This is sort of an unofficial. She says, it's March 14th. If you have to ask, ... So I said, I'm asking. Well, apparently, this is blowjob and steak day for guys.
March 14th?
March 14th. Now, that
I've
has come and gone
the
in my life.
30 years of that. What the hell's going on?
I don't know. But apparently, that is an underground kind of thing that okay. If you have, you know, you got your lady with you.
All right, so we're going to do an episode that day on the 14th. We're going to do Sal and Bob show from a strip club.
Yeah.
We're just going to go to a strip club.
Well, we know we can get a steak and a beeger.
Yeah.
At the strip club. We don't pay for either, though.
I know we're bouncing around here because we got a great interview coming up with boxing writer Bill Detloff. But I want to... The playoffs are heating up here in baseball. Yankees are currently 3-2. They won last night.
And what did you say? Verlander, 4 runs in the first inning, right?
Yeah, they got 4 runs in the first inning.
How many times did he do that to us?
He shut
him
down after that. Yeah.
But the game was already lost. You can't give up 4 runs in a playoff game.
No.
What's the over-under in a typical MLB playoff game? 5?
Oh, no. These games are all around 7.5, 8.
Really? I didn't.
Yeah,
I
maybe
thought...
last night was probably 7.5, but this Yankee series is going under. They've only had 1 over. That was the last game where it was like 8-3 or whatever.
I'm surprised by that. But so he
gives, I know. There's some
he gives
good
up his entire
there.
Allotment of runs in the first inning. How many times as a Tiger did we have to watch that happen?
No, you're right. And it's kind of funny because Joe Buck and the other guy were talking about baseball playoff are usually low scoring games because what happens is over 162 game year, you're playing middle of the road pitchers and you're killing those guys and you're hitting home runs and everything. Well, when the playoffs start, there's only 6 teams left or 4 teams left sometimes in your own league. You're facing good pitching every game. So the hitting
pitching,
gets less, and it was really interesting what they were talking about. So it's kind of funny you brought that up, but. So Washington is in for the National League. They're sitting back waiting. They're probably working out, hitting batting practice, but it's nothing like real live game. They say that hurts teams.
Mm-hmm.
If you remember, the Detroit Tigers.
Hurt the Tigers.
We swept the Yankees, and we waited for freaking San Francisco
or St. Louis. It was like 6 days or something.
Yeah, we waited almost like, I think, a week or over a week, and we got rusty.
Yeah.
And that was it. We got swept.
Yep.
We got swept by the San Francisco and St. Louis.
Who was the culprit in those losses?
That was Verlander.
Verlander.
Yeah, exactly.
Giving up bad dingers at the wrong time.
Yeah, but now that Scherzer now is on Washington's staff.
Yeah.
And if it is Houston's got to win one more game. It's starting to look like it's going to be Washington-Houston, but you never know. It's going to be an interesting World Series. Football is in the 7th week right now. And interesting, the Lions lost on Monday night. We don't have time to really get into it. But,
They didn't lose. They got robbed.
They got robbed. And so a lot of stuff's happening in the NFL. Long way to go. Basketball is getting ready to start. We're not big basketball guys. Hockey just kicked off. The Red Wings are kind of middle of the road. But it's just a fun time to be a sports fan.
Yeah,
right
it is.
Now.
It's a great time
obviously,
of year.
Obviously, boxing is coming, is around. I mean, obviously, you got some big fights coming up.
Yep.
We're going to talk to Bill about that. And just a good time, man. Middle of October, getting ready for the, you know, all the holiday stuff. And And Halloween, you're going to pass out candy over at the Northville.
No, nobody Park. Nobody comes over.
You know, well, you'd have to open up the gate. Yeah, 50
I look like Willy Wonka here. I look, I should have a lot of chocolate, but I don't have. Nobody ever comes up.
So you're not in the right area for trick.
No, but I've given my cotton candy machine. We've talked about this on previous episodes. I used to spin cotton candy for the neighborhood kids when I lived in Novi,
oh, yeah,
Michigan.
That's right.
I've given that to my daughter, who now has a 2-year-old, my grandson Asa, and she is now continuing that in her neighborhood.
That's really cool.
Yeah,
I think trick or treating has gone down a little bit because I go over to my dad's house because they got more of a neighborhood. I mean, I just live in an apartment, so I can't really do it. But so where my dad lives is there's a lot of houses are close together over there in Livonia, 7 Mile Merriman, and people listening will know what I'm talking about. So years ago, you could give away candy and stand there at my dad's door for 2 hours sometimes.
Yeah.
I mean, it starts about dusk around 6:30, mm-hmm. and you'd be there till 8:30. I did it last year.
Yeah.
It was like a half hour.
Yeah.
I mean, a big rush of kids came.
Uh-huh.
And then it was it. That was all. It was over. I don't know if people are afraid to do that now because of just the craziness of our world. You know, just terrorism out there.
I don't know. I think neighborhoods change.
Shit,
you know, the neighborhood you grow up in is
maybe
not
it's
the
a
neighborhood
little older.
It,
yeah,
it
true.
Is later because it
That's
doesn't
true.
Have these, you know, house yeah. full of 3, 4, 5 kids anymore.
That's true. I didn't think about
families
that.
Families are having 1 and 2, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, it kind of bums me
I
out.
I didn't know if it was about the security reasons.
I think part of that is.
You know, mothers just don't want their kids to go up to some
factor.
House that they don't really know. Maybe they don't know that person, yeah. that neighbor. I don't know. I'm not
I
saying.
Wouldn't come to my house.
I would. Well, what else you got, man? Where else are you going to be? We appreciate you guys listening.
We got, you know, I got a bunch of gigs coming up. I'm in Carroll, Michigan next week.
Okay.
At Mitch Gill's Get a Room.
Yeah, it's a good gig.
Comedy shop.
Gig.
So I'm looking
at the Ann Arbor Comedy Showcase.
Oh, yeah.
Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
That's a big weekend, yeah.
Come on out Thursday and Friday if you can, because Saturday's a Michigan-Notre Dame game in Michigan at 7:30. It's a night
Well,
game.
People are going to be needing a
but
laugh then, because Notre
be
Dame is going to hand the Wolverines another L.
We'll see. I think Michigan's going to
Think
win
so?
That game.
I just think Harbaugh is the most overrated choke artist coach.
I know you feel that way, but I think Michigan's better than what people are saying.
I hope
they
so.
Are.
I do.
I really do. I think
I
they're going
to
play Wisconsin
successful.
In the Big Ten Championship. It's going to be the big rematch. And it's going to be a rematch. I'm calling it right now. Michigan plays Wisconsin. They're going to beat Ohio State.
Okay.
They're going to
All
beat
right.
Michigan State. They're going to beat Notre Dame.
I would love that.
Yep. And
I'm
then
not,
they're going
I'm...
to play Wisconsin in Indianapolis. And I don't know what's going to happen in that game. But because they got their ass kicked in Wisconsin,
they
may come back and beat them. Kind of like your fighter story that you just told. I mean,
yeah.
I think
boom,
that's,
boom.
Yeah.
Coming back from
Michigan's
getting
gonna
pummeled.
Be boom, boom.
All
yep,
right.
I think that's
I
what's
going to
happen. So. You want to get this interview going, man?
Yeah, let's get this going. This is a friend of ours, friend of the show, William Detloff, a great boxing writer, was the senior boxing writer for Ring Magazine for 15 years. Ring Magazine, the Bible of boxing. All right, so here's our interview with Bill Detloff.
From Youngstown, Ohio, hey, boom, boom, Mancini, a lightweight contender, like father, like son. In Vegas, and he pulled him away in round number one. So
Bob, we got our guest is with us here, and want to introduce this guy, give you a little bit of background on our guest here today. He was a writer for Ring Magazine for many, many years. He's worked with HBO and ESPN.com. He's written a book called Box Like the Pros, an instructional book with Smoke and Joe Frazier. I got to ask him about that.
Yeah.
Also a 1940s biography on the great boxer Ezzard Charles. With us today is William Detloff. Welcome to the Sal and Bob Show, buddy.
Thanks very much, guys. Thanks for having me.
Just seeing some of the stuff online of you. One of the things, I'm not as big as huge boxing fan as Bob is. I mean, I've obviously followed it my whole life, all the big fights. I got a story about watching a fight with my dad that I want to talk to you about later. But you're obviously got just a huge background in it. So I just right off the bat here, What is the probably the greatest fight live you ever saw, and maybe what is the what you think is the greatest fight ever, whether you were there or not?
You know what? The greatest fight I ever saw live is a harder one. It probably would be one of the Gotti Ward fights, Arturo Gotti and Mickey Ward fights.
Okay,
great trilogy,
great
from some years ago. And I think, although it was anticlimactic compared to the other two, I didn't attend the first or third ones, but I was there for the second one.
Okay,
and oftentimes in great trilogies, just like Ali and Frazier and other trilogies, the second one is usually the least exciting. And unfortunately, that was the one I was assigned to cover, but it was still a good fight. And when I say that it was one of the best I ever saw live, I'm really kind of attributing it or associating it with the first and third fight, which were great.
Sure.
But for me, without a doubt, the greatest fight I've ever seen and my favorite fight of all time is the George Foreman Ron Lyle fight from 1976.
Wow.
Oh, that's a good one.
You guys, yeah, if even casual boxing fans have seen that one. It's all over YouTube and all over Facebook. And it was Foreman's, and I was a big Foreman guy as a kid, and I still am. But it was his first fight back after, his first serious fight back after the loss to Muhammad Ali in 1974. And Ron Lyle was a top contender, and you guys probably know this, but Lyle dropped Foreman in the fourth round, and
yep.
Foreman got up and dropped Lyle, and then Lyle dropped Foreman again in the fourth round, and then the fifth round, Foreman knocked him out. But it was it's really an incredible fight. I never tire of watching it on YouTube.
Wow.
Never tire.
Yeah, those were two guys. Now, I guess it's you could arguably say that Foreman was still at his peak, even though he'd lost to Ali.
Physically, yeah, he was.
Yeah, physically. That's a good point to make, physically. So these were two guys that were just going after each other from the opening bell, and I agree with you. That was a hell of a fight.
Yeah, it was a good fight.
I've never seen a better one, yeah.
You know, I was kind of talking off air with Bob before the show. Now, I grew up, again, not the hugest boxing fan, but I remember watching like ABC Wild World of Sports with my dad sitting there in the living room Livonia, Michigan, watching, you know, Muhammad Ali fight Ken Norton. And it was like must-see TV. I know NBC's taking that slogan, but that was must-see TV to me. I know there's so many attributes, but what do you think has changed from those days of just watching it on television now? It's kind of a pay-per-view event, and a lot of people don't even maybe know what's going on, where back then it was just such a big spectacle. I know that's probably a tough question to answer, but what do you think attributed to that? Is it just about the money?
Well, largely, like everything is, right? But what I think, when I was in grammar school, everybody knew who the heavyweight champ was. Everybody knew who the contenders were. Everybody knew who Muhammad Ali was. And it's not even remotely like that now. And here's what I think has happened. The fan base has shrunk in large part because other sports have taken up some fans. And I'm not talking just about MMA, just the NFL and the NBA and Major League Baseball also are very big entertainment vehicles now, right? Which boxing is all sports are, right?
Yeah.
And so the fan base has shrunk for a lot of reasons that involve other options, right? And so boxing is run like kind of like a big corporation is right now. In terms of make as much money now as you can and don't worry about building the game for the future or building a future fan base. Just make as much money now as you can and get out. And so that's, I think, the genesis behind pay-per-view. If the fan base has shrunk and you need other ways to generate money, I guess the way is to make people pay for the product, whereas they used to get it for free. When I say for free, I mean, you know, you have to sit through a couple commercials.
Sure.
About AMC Gremlins or things like that, right? the fan base has shrunk, and so you have to generate money in other ways. And also, that's part of our culture, too. Like, nobody can be a millionaire anymore. Everybody's got to be a billionaire. Just not only in sports, but in film industry and everything. Everything's got to make $1 billion. Nobody can be just a millionaire anymore.
Exactly.
But I think that's part of it as well.
Bill, it's interesting you brought up a point, and I figured you were going to answer that question just like you did. But you mentioned this MMA, and I just want to tell you real quick my quick little MMA story. So I didn't know anything about that genre of boxing or whatever you want to call it. And my first time I ever said, okay, I'm going to sit down and watch this and give it a chance. And as soon as I saw a guy, I forgot what fight I saw, And as soon as I saw a guy do like a Fred Astaire kick and freaking punch the guy with his heel in the guy's ear, I went, I'm out. I'm not going to like this sport because of what I just told you earlier. I grew up on straight boxing, watching Muhammad Ali and watching that. I can't get into this MMA. I don't know how you feel about that. I don't know if you write about it. I don't. I'm just not into that at all. I know it's a huge sport, and God bless the people that love it, but for me, I'll take a regular boxing match any day of the week.
As will I.
As will I. I don't write about it. I wish that I could get into it. I tried a couple times, but I had a very similar situation. I fell for the little build-up before a fight, and I sat down and said, okay, I'm going to watch these two guys fight, and I'm going to enjoy it. Because, hey, if I could dig it, I'd make a lot more money writing about MMA than I do boxing.
Right,
let me get into this. And they came out, and number one, they have no shoes on, and I can't deal with guys running around with bare feet.
I'm right with you,
I can't
man.
Do it. Can't do it.
It's like guys wearing sandals in summer.
Boxers wear shoes like every other civilized person. So that's number one. I can't deal with guys running around in bare feet, especially kicking each other in the face. Like, that's too gross. But anyway, so as soon as these guys came out, and as soon as they went to the mat, I was done. I'm just not into watching these guys roll around on the mat with their bare
feet the same
all over
each other.
Yeah, the bare feet all over each other.
Yeah.
But I can't. But I know many people who were boxing fans who are tired of the shit in boxing, and rightly so. I can't blame them.
Yeah.
You can't blame anybody who leaves boxing for MMA or any other sport, because boxing does very little to help itself in the long term or the short term. But, so I wish I could get into MMA, but I cannot either. So I know exactly where you're coming
from. Okay, good. I'm glad to hear you say that. And I kind of just running along the lines of what we're talking about, since we talked a little bit about the past, we're talking a little bit about the present, how you said boxing has taken a little bit of a backseat to MMA. What do you see for the future then, Bill? What do you see? It could be a resurgence in what I call regular boxing. Is it going to take another Mike Tyson or somebody like that, a character, a persona, so to speak? Do you think that's going to happen?
Well, there'll always be a star. Boxing fans are the most pessimistic people because no other sport checks its pulse as much as boxing does.
That's true.
Every week you'll see a newspaper article, boxing is dying, boxing is dying. And people were writing that boxing is dying 100 years ago. Right. And that's really true.
Yeah, it's not new.
Everybody, I don't know why that is exactly, because they don't say that about other sports nearly as much as boxing. And so boxing fans tend to do that too a lot of times, unless they've been around forever, unless they're a lifer like me, and then you just don't give a shit. But so boxing checks its pulse constantly, and people like to say as soon as this boxer is retired, boxing's going to die. And they said that about Muhammad Ali, and they said it about John O'Sullivan, they said it about Joe Louis. But there's always a star that comes along. Mike Tyson comes along, or Oscar De La Hoya comes along, or Manny Pacquiao comes along. There's always a star that comes along in some weight class. And right now it's Canelo Alvarez.
Yes.
Who
has made more money, I think, at this point already than any boxer ever, with the possible exception of Floyd Mayweather, right?
Right.
So there's always a star that comes along that keeps interest
sure.
in boxing. And really, when we talk about the death of boxing or how sick it is, or how niche it's gotten. We're really just talking about in the United States, because internationally, boxing is really the second most popular sport, right behind football, or what we call in America soccer. If you go around the world, it's still very, very popular.
South America, Mexico.
Now, does every big fight in America have to be in Vegas? Is there other venues around the country, or is it always Vegas now? You know what I mean? I mean, I don't know.
Well, yeah, we're getting away from that a little bit. There are more venues now in California. It's getting some big fights. Brooklyn, New York is...
That's right, Brooklyn, you're right.
They're getting some good fights these days. It was all about, when the fights go to Vegas, it's all about bringing the gamblers out, and the big spenders who want to stay at the casinos 24/7 before the fight. So I get that. There's the money to be made there for the promoters and other people. But I think, the very biggest fights still end up in Vegas, but California and New York are doing a good job too. I'd love it if a lot of big fights came back to Atlantic City. When I was growing up, and you guys, there were a lot of big fights in Atlantic City, and that was a lot of fun. But I don't know if that's going to happen, but we'll see.
Yeah,
I wanted to jump in here, Bill, and ask you about you mentioned Canelo Alvarez, how he's made more money now than many pro fighters, maybe, you know, with the exception of Floyd Mayweather. Now, boxing has this thing where the sport continually frustrates its core fans by coming out with horrible decisions, right? And one of those, in my mind, was certainly the first Alvarez Triple G fight, where they called that a draw. And the second one, where they gave Canelo the win, when I thought it could have gone either way. And I had Triple G winning both of those fights. So now they fought twice. Triple G has absolutely nothing to show for it. A couple of good paydays. I mean, it's not like he did it for free.
Right.
But it seems to me like you're saying a star comes along in boxing at the right time, and they always do. And Alvarez is the guy now. To me, he was the anointed one. He was the guy. They said, look, he's good looking. He's from Mexico, which has maybe the most rabid fan base in the world, right?
Yep.
And
yep.
So they anointed him, and they said, hey, judges, you know what? This is kind of our guy. And if it's close, this is who we want.
Yeah,
you know, to have the belt. Is that just a conspiracy mind that I'm nurturing here, or is that a real thing?
First, I'll say that I agree with you. I thought Golovkin clearly won the first fight, deserved the first fight.
Yeah.
And I thought he deserved the second fight as well.
Yeah.
But I know just as many people who think that Canelo won and deserved a decision in both those fights. So decisions is a very subjective thing, of course, and this has gone on in boxing forever and in every sport. But it does seem to happen a lot in boxing, and I think you're right in that Canelo has always been the A-side, right?
Yep.
And even if it's not as overt as somebody saying to the judges, this red-headed, freckled Mexican is the new star, make sure you take care of him, it doesn't have to be as overt as that. It's, you know, the judges get flown out to Vegas, and they get taken care of.
Yes.
Somebody sends a couple of hookers to their room. They get everything they want. And you know who's paying those bills. Right?
This is the part of boxing I love. And I'm so glad you're on the line with us. Because, go ahead, keep going.
I wish I could go back in time.
This
I want to
so
become
true.
A boxing ref now.
Sorry to interrupt you, but this is why I love boxing. Because hookers are sent to the judges' rooms and other things. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, that kind of shit happens. Don't think it doesn't. That kind of shit happens all the time. So one of my favorite bits from a comedian that I love named Doug Stanhope is that he wanted to make the currency blowjobs and cheeseburgers, because that's what the world runs on. It's true. So anyway, and it's very true in boxing as well. So my larger point, I guess, is that the judges and all the officials related to boxing, they know what the deal is. They know what they're supposed to do. Nobody has to tell them,
yes.
You know, give Canelo every close round,
right.
That kind of thing. But again, at the same time, this kind of thing has always happened to boxing for as long as there's been boxing. And it's such a subjective process. You can make the case for a decision going the other way in almost any case, in
sure.
almost any fight. You know, it's very subjective.
I mean, you kind of feel for judges sometimes. I mean, if a fight goes the full distance and each boxer won the exact amount of rounds each, I mean, that's about as close a call as you can get, right? It's like a horse race of down to the wire.
Yeah, it's not easy.
I can't imagine totally it's very subjective.
Easy. And we've all had that situation, myself included, where I thought a guy clearly won and said it, and everybody else looked at me like, what the fuck were you watching?
Yeah,
yeah.
So you do have to feel for judges in that respect, because if you watch fights long enough, you're going to be that guy who, you're going to be the only guy who had that guy winning.
Yeah,
okay? Sure.
And that's not a matter of corruption.
You sure.
Know, we all enter these things with our own biases and conceived opinions about guys going in, and we all look at different things and prefer different styles. So there's so much to go into it. And it fucks everything up and pisses people off, but that's kind of the charm of boxing, again, along with the hookers and the judges.
Well, that's a great point. It fucks things up and pisses people off. That is boxing.
Now, but is there ever a fight, which I'm going to bring up you, Bob, you want to talk about this Hearns fight that mm-hmm. you think, is that, in your opinion, was that something that was close to being rigged? I mean, do you feel Hearns?
No. I think it was, well, here's okay. Now, Bill, this is the ultimate Homer talking to you. I was a Tommy
sure.
Hearns fan from the time he got his start back in the mid-70s, and I watched his career. I mean, You know, I mean, it's stupid me. I actually thought I could fight like Tommy Hearns at one time, right? But, I mean, he lost the first fight to Leonard badly. He was, we know how that went. He was ahead on all the scorecards. Angelo Dundee told Sugar Ray, "You're blowing it, kid." And lo and behold, he rescues his career with a knockout of Tommy Hearns. Now, the second fight, which was far less important, it's like 9 years later. I think it's 1989. It was still a good fight because they were still, you know, wonderfully talented fighters. But Tommy knocks Sugar Ray down twice and just manhandles him for the entire fight, and they give it a draw. That to me was just, that was a Sugar Ray decision because it's like nobody, you know, what are they going to do with Tommy Hearns now in 1989? You know, oh, the better story was Sugar Ray resurrects his career. You know, to me, that's what happened. What was your opinion of that?
Well, here the subjectivity comes in again. I thought Hearns deserved the fight. Okay. But I thought there were plenty of moments when Leonard was in the fight. And I remember watching the last seconds when it certainly appeared that Hearns was about to get his ass knocked out.
Yes.
I remember screaming at the TV, "Hold, Tommy, hold," because I hated Leonard.
Yeah, me too.
And I liked, and I liked Tommy Hearns. But here's the thing. Hearns, I think he deserved the decision, but he only had himself to blame for not winning it because he didn't throw enough punches.
Okay.
There was so much posing. And if you go back and watch that fight on YouTube now, you hear Gil Clancy saying it repeatedly. Why isn't Hearns throwing punches? Why isn't he didn't punch enough? And I think that the reason for that was he was afraid to get countered. He knew Leonard was faster, not by much, but he also knew that Leonard could hurt him. So he kept his hands at home, I think, more than he should have. Do I think he deserved the win? I do. But when you're fighting a guy like Leonard with the name recognition and the whole industry media behind him, he needed to do more than Hearns did, I think. I still dislike Leonard for many reasons, one of which is waiting so long to give Hearns that rematch. And he didn't do it until he was certain that Hearns was shot.
Right.
And he turned out not to be, right?
Yeah.
But the story is that the story Leonard tells is that he wouldn't give Hearns the shot until Hearns admitted that David Pearl was correct in stopping the first fight. For a long time, Hearns said the fight shouldn't have been stopped. I wasn't hurt that bad. And Leonard says, just to be a prick, he refused to give him a rematch until he admitted that the fight was correctly stopped. When in truth, I think it was just that he didn't want Hearns again until he was certain that Hearns was shot. And he gambled on him being shot. Same the reason he didn't fight Hagler until he was certain.
Yes, that
in that case he was right.
Yeah, he was. And that fight was such a boring non-fight.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, and Hagler. Well, you know, Hagler. He predicted it was going to happen. If it's a close fight, I'm going to lose this because they want Leonard to win it. Well, don't make it close, man. Put him on his ass. Well,
exactly,
he didn't do it.
Exactly right. And Hagler made a couple strategic errors that have all of us shaking our heads all these years later. He came out and fought in an orthodox stance.
Yes.
And he wasn't active enough early in the fight. He gave away the early rounds and then cried that he didn't get the decision. You can't do that shit.
No.
You can't do it. He underestimated Leonard.
And he should, and he knew. I mean, he predicted what was going to happen. So why not go balls out? Why not go and try to take Leonard's head off? Hagler knew he had the chin. Sugar Ray wasn't going to rattle him. But anyway, okay, so that's enough
stuff.
I talked too much about Sugar Ray.
It's all good. We're talking to William Detlef here, and he's got a couple of books out. This Ezra Charles, well, I guess one of the questions I want to ask you, Bill, is what do you think, I want to get into this fighter here, but what do you think the greatest boxing movie ever was, or what's your favorite?
Good question.
What's your favorite?
You know what? I know a lot of people who have very strong opinions on boxing movies, and I don't, because I'm really not I'm not much of a movie guy. Number one,
okay,
in general, and I go out of my way to not watch boxing movies because, and I'm gonna sound really conceited here, but when you know too much about a subject, you can't watch a movie made by someone who knows less than you.
Sure.
Because you're just tortured by all the inaccuracies and mistakes. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
All the bullshit you see. And all kinds of corners need to be cut and realities changed.
They got to make it a story.
That will appeal to the masses. Right, exactly. A perfect example is the Ron Howard movie about Jim Jimmy Braddock.
Yes.
And the big controversy about Max Baer's character.
Yeah.
And how Max Baer was a scumbag in the movie. And Max Baer was a sweetheart of a guy.
Yeah.
Who didn't really want to hurt anybody. Didn't even really like boxing because it involved punishing other people.
Yeah.
And so that would bother any purist who knows the history, right?
Yes.
But Ron Howard's response is, well, we weren't making a documentary. And that's true.
Yeah, right.
That's
yeah.
A good response.
Artistic license, and he's doing
right,
his job,
exactly right.
And you're doing your job pointing out the inaccuracies.
Yeah.
Right. So the way I handle things like that is I just don't watch them.
Okay.
That's a great answer.
I don't have the in-depth knowledge you do, although I've been a huge fight fan my whole life, and I've done a lot of reading. I haven't done the deep dive you have. I've not had a career in it like you have. But yeah, there's certain movies I just can't watch. Yeah, and I remember, Cinderella Man was a great, it was a fun movie to watch. But when they got to the Max Baer part, I remember thinking, why are they making him out to be such a jerk? He was a teddy bear, you know?
Exactly.
So,
and I understand why they did it. You have to have that conflict, right?
Yeah.
I get that. There has to be a villain.
Right.
But, and the same thing with The Hurricane, the movie about Reuben Hurricane Carter.
Yeah.
His fight with Joey Giardello. Was painted as a result of his loss was painted as a result of racism and corruption and all kinds of nasty shit like that.
Yeah.
And it was entirely untrue. Joey Giardello was a sweetheart of a guy, just like Max Baer.
Yeah.
And it was a close fight that Giardello won. And in fact, in that fight, Giardello and or his relatives sued the production company, got some money because they felt that they harmed his reputation, and they were right. But I get, again, why the movie makers do those things. They have to. But I just handle that by just not watching.
Sure. Awesome. Awesome, Bill. Well, hey, we're talking for our listeners out there, we're talking to Bill Detloff, who his latest book is a biography, a 1940s biography of boxer Ezzard Charles. So you guys should pick that up. One question. I don't know too much about Ezzard that much. Did he fight Rocky Marciano once or a couple times?
He fought Marciano twice.
Twice?
First time they fought, yes, was a wonderful fight, a back-and-forth slugfest in which Marciano, first of all, said Marciano was a heavy favorite because Ez was considered past his prime, and Charles fought him right down to the wire, but faded in the late rounds. And people generally disliked Ezzard Charles. He was one of those guys that nobody liked in the sport. And they rematched, and Marciano just blew him away for probably any number of reasons. So he fought Marciano twice. He fought Joe Louis and beat him, which is one of the reasons people dislike him even more. You beat an icon like
Detroit,
that.
Detroit, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But he fought all the great heavyweights and light heavyweights and middleweights of his era.
Yeah, impressive career this guy had, man. Just impressive guy.
Now, speaking of heavyweights, we can't have this interview with you without talking about comparing heavyweights from different eras. Marciano, great fighter. Natural, middleweight, light heavyweight, really. You know,
cruiserweight, yeah.
Cruiserweight. That would be the better distinction. Hell of a fighter, but, I mean, he couldn't make it in the heavyweights today. They're just too damn big, too fast, too athletic. Now, that's my opinion. What do you think about that?
I don't know. I don't know what to say about that because The size difference is one thing. First of all, I should say that it's a pet peeve of mine in the sport. I think people overestimate and overrate entirely size in boxing.
Hmm.
Right? Everybody says, oh, the first thing people look at when they're attempting to handicap a fight is which guy's bigger.
Yeah.
And if you really know boxing, you know that's just entirely an inaccurate way of doing it, an inappropriate way of doing it, because boxing is more about speed,
yes.
Or it used to be at least, about speed and conditioning and mechanics and technique. So people automatically go to size, and that's always bugged me. But you might be right about the size disparity being too much to overcome, because all heavyweights were much smaller in Marciano's day. But even he was small even for then. Jack Dempsey was bigger than Rocky Marciano.
Wow.
Yes. Okay? He was short.
He's a very short guy. But not only did he overcome that, he used it to his advantage, because Marciano really knew how to fight. He looked like a caveman in there, just cavemaning guys with the submission, right? But he also really knew how to fight and set up his power punches. The question of comparing eras is such a tricky one, because, for example, I'm of the opinion that for the most part, today's heavyweights suck.
Okay? I'm with you.
especially in comparison to the heavyweights of the 1970s, which was the era I grew up in. But you have to temper that opinion with the knowledge that in the 70s, there were guys saying, today's heavyweight sucks. Today's heavyweight sucks. None of them could hold a candle to Joe Louis.
Right.
Right? And when Joe Louis was fighting, guys were saying, Joe Louis sucks. Jack Dempsey would kick his ass.
Yeah.
And when Jack Dempsey was fighting, guys were saying, John L. Sullivan would destroy this guy. Okay? So we all favor the fighters from our era.
It's true.
Yes, we do.
So I feel like all my heroes from the 70s would destroy Tyson Fury and Andy Ruiz especially.
Yeah.
and these guys and Deontay Wilder. But I can't trust it.
That's a very good point you make there. Very good point. These are not schlubs. These are very talented athletes.
They're in great shape. Their nutrition is better now than
that's
in the 70s.
Too, yeah.
And, you know, more training facilities and equipment. And
yeah, I mean, the training aspect of it alone has been leaps and bounds.
But that goes both ways. That goes both ways because we see guys doing things in training now that, to most of us, make absolutely no sense. You see guys training with the pool noodles and bouncing balls around and doing things like that's why would anybody do that? It has nothing to do with boxing. My feeling has always been if you want to be the best that you can be, just do what the best ever did. So if Joe Louis didn't do any of that shit, why would you do it?
Good point.
That's great.
Maybe I'm full of shit. I don't know. I'm a dinosaur at this point.
You make a very good point there, and you've obviously written about and analyzed and boxed yourself, so you know the ins and outs of things. I want to throw something at you. You're talking about the heavyweight division sucking these days. I don't know that we got a Ruiz Joshua rematch coming up, and I like Ruiz. He's just a big happy hat, you know. And nobody gave him a shot, and here he just knocks out this pretty boy. What do you think is going to happen in the rematch?
I think it'll probably happen again. I do have a slight suspicion that Joshua wasn't entirely at his best on that night. And that happens. Sometimes you just have an off night.
Yeah.
You know? And as soon as he got hit, he just fell apart. And we've seen him in other cases get hit and hurt and not fall apart. So there was something, seemed something was different that night, and maybe all that was different was Ruiz, was the guy who hit him, I don't know. However, in most cases, and you guys have been watching fights a long time, you know that the standard is if a guy gets knocked out in the first fight, he probably gets knocked out again in the rematch and probably a little faster.
Yeah.
So it can happen. Ruiz is a deceptively good fighter. You know, you can't just go by that. He's a fat guy.
He's in shape. He just has the body type that looks bad. He's a pressure fighter, and he just got inside of Joshua's defenses. And I think you're right. I think he's going to do it again.
That's going to be.
I think so. It's largely, and as you guys know, this is largely a matter of styles. Joseph Parker beat Ruiz by moving and outboxing him and taking advantage of his slow feet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The response would be, well, why can't Joshua just do that? He's not the same guy.
Yeah.
He's not the guy who can move around all night and be mobile and jab. He's more of a puncher.
Well, there you go. You've just proven the old adage, styles makes fights, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and there are so many examples of that if you go down through history. The most famous one, of course, is probably George Foreman destroyed Joe Frazier and Ken Norton.
Yeah.
Joe Frazier and Ken Norton beat Muhammad Ali. Why couldn't George Foreman beat Muhammad Ali?
You know,
it's all styles.
Yeah.
It's all styles.
Very good point.
It's always been like that. It always would be like that.
Those fights were unbelievable.
Now, I'm a homer, and we're gonna wrap up here soon, although I could talk to you all day.
It's
this is fascinating
stuff to
me. You brought up a good point that if somebody gets knocked out in the first fight, that chances are they're going to get knocked out in the second.
And quicker.
Yeah. that did not happen to the Hitman. with Leonard, he got knocked out the first one, but he came back and put Sugar Ray on his ass.
This fight up, Bob.
No, I gotta say.
You know what? Go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, Sugar Ray actually admitted that a couple years ago. Did you see that? I forget where it was.
He thinks Hearns deserved the decision.
Yes,
the second fight.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, Tommy Hearns is a badass man.
He was
a badass, and history doesn't. I think record accurately, or I should say, today's fans don't know accurately what a badass he was.
I think you're right.
One of the reasons is, people like to say, they look at his record and say, well, he couldn't win big fights. He couldn't beat Hagler and he couldn't beat Leonard in the big fights. But the Duran fight was pretty big, right?
Yeah, that Duran, was pretty big.
Right? The Cuevas fight was big.
Yes.
And he tore Cuevas' head off.
Yep.
The Virgil Hill fight was big, and he boxed Virgil Hill silly.
Yes.
Right? So there were big fights that he performed very well in.
Yeah.
He just couldn't beat Hagler, and he couldn't beat Leonard in their first fight.
Yeah.
So Tommy Hearns was a legitimate badass.
Yeah. I'm glad you said that. Thanks for appealing to the homer in me.
My pleasure.
Yeah.
I saw him at a buffet at a Detroit casino a couple months ago.
Did you?
6 months ago.
Yeah.
Had to go up to him while he's getting his mashed potatoes.
Yeah, he's going
to
be on the show here in a couple weeks.
Oh, cool.
Oh, yeah. That'll be great. That'll be great.
Talk to a mutual friend.
We've had a great time with Bill today. Man.
Yeah, we have. Is there anything you want to throw our listeners' way, Bill? Is there something you want to pitch? Anything you want to talk about before we wrap up?
Well, sure. I'd like to pitch my magazine. I'm the editor-in-chief of Ringside Seat Magazine, quarterly, which we like to... say is fashioned after the old Sports Illustrated model of long-form sports journalism, and in this case, sport being boxing, and it's digital. So it's a digital quarterly boxing magazine. Go to ringsideseatmag.com. You can buy any one of our previous 8 issues. Our 9th issue is coming out soon, and we also have the podcast, Ringside Seat Podcast, hosted by yours truly. And, yeah, sure. Check out my books, Box Like the Pros, that I wrote with Joe Frazier some years ago, and more recently, As a Trials of Boxing Life. And I think that's it.
Yeah, it's really good stuff. I was on Ringside Seat, so definitely our listeners should check that out. The last thing I wanted to ask him about was I saw a little excerpt. I don't know if you have your own biography. It was called Ditch Digger. Is that? That was great.
No,
I got like freaking like goosebumps reading that. So
did you really?
I really enjoyed that. I didn't know if it was a excerpt from your biography or what that was all about, but I really enjoyed it. It was really good writing.
Thank you. Yeah. No, that's not an autobiography excerpt. That's just a little essay I wrote to advertise my little skills. I do occasionally deviate from boxing into personal essays and other things. So that was a little advertisement.
That was great.
But I appreciate you saying that. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Very nice.
It was really, really good. Anything, Bob? You good?
Well, like I said, we could go on all day. We're going to have another... We're going to call you up again sometime.
Yeah,
if you're okay with
that. I'd be happy
to come on again.
Yeah, we definitely need to dive into more stuff with Bill. So thank you so much, Bill. Appreciate your time today.
My pleasure. Thank you, guys.
Well, that'll wrap up another episode of the Sal and Bob Show. You just heard a great interview with William Detloff. That was great talking to that guy.
Wasn't that fun? Man. We're going to have him on again.
Yeah, I mean, we need more time with him.
We do.
Just interesting dude. Just boxing's his life, and it's great. He's good at it.
The expert.
Yeah, so definitely check out Bill's stuff online. Told you a little bit about it. Hey, great episode. Great Sweetest Day episode. Great gig tonight with you. Had a great night here for some late night drinks and food here at Finn's in New Baltimore. So if you're ever in the area, come on out and check this place out, man. It's really cool. It's right in downtown New Baltimore.
By the way, they have a drink here. And I don't think they knew how funny this was. I don't know. Depending on your politics, let's just have a little fun with this. They have the drink menu, and it's all these autumnal specialties like pumpkin spice and autumn sangria with Moscato and apple liqueur and brandy. And they have one here called the Russian pumpkin. And I thought, wasn't that our president? Really? I mean,
Oh, my God.
He is the Russian pumpkin.
Isn't it crazy? We see the words Russian and pumpkin, and we think of our president. That's where we've gotten today.
It's his fault.
Man, well, thanks for listening to another episode of the Sal and Bob Steakhouse Podcast. We appreciate you guys listening in. Obviously, share us. Talk about us on Facebook, On Tour Records.
Love us. We're everywhere. What we're saying. Love us. Show us some love.
Come see our comedy shows. Thanks to Nate Armbruster for...
Thank you, Nathan.
Doing everything he does. And we're going to take you out with some more of Warren Zevon, Ray Boom Boom Mancini. Good night, everybody.
Good night.